I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, unless we ask for calls. We have with us this evening Mr. John Quirk. And Mr. Quirk teaches at a diplomatic school in Paris. He has a home in Normandy, as one in Florida. I had the privilege of meeting him recently and asked him to come onto our program, and he has been our guest on our to our other audiences. But I wanted our evening audience to hear what he has to say as well, because he has written extensively a number of books. He has actually contacts with people in intelligence agencies, not only in our country, but throughout the world. A fascinating outlook on what's going on throughout the world today, which I think you'll find quite different than most of what you're going to hear. Mr. Quirk, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Stan. It's nice to be with you.
Well, now, why don't you just sort of tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, you know, because you've written a great deal. You've certainly written books and articles and lectured extensively. What about this diplomatic school over there in Paris? Why do we have a school for diplomats?
Oh, sure. There's a number of schools for diplomats, and even in the Islamic world, they're starting new schools. And the modules that are usually taught are for diplomatic training, diplomatic immunity, international trade, international finance, and then the new courses that have been offered that have never really been offered before are courses in national security, such as intelligence, courses on anti-terrorism, courses about maritime security and the whole homeland security issue that diplomats and military attachés now have to study.
Now, what about Europeans and even people from Muslim countries? Would they come to meetings like this?
Oh, yes. At our school, at the Center for Diplomatic and Strategic Studies in Paris, we have Muslim ambassadors, military attachés, ambassadors from Africa, Europe, Eastern Europe, and they study a whole range of subjects. I teach courses on the world's intelligence agencies, intelligence and diplomacy, intelligence and national security, and then I teach a course on anti-terrorism. So diplomats are very, very much attuned to learning these subjects.
Well, do the intelligence agencies throughout the world work with one another? Are they competing with one another? What's the relationship?
Well, it's a good question. It's traditionally, during the Cold War, a number of intelligence services in third world countries liaisoned with the Russians. The Cubans did it, the North Koreans, any communist countries. And then, of course, the Western countries, especially English-speaking countries, England, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Bahamas, South Africa, liaisoned with America. And, of course, Western European countries liaisoned with America and each other. Today, you need a scorecard to figure out who's with who nowadays.
So things have gotten a lot more complicated. Well, don't the Muslim nations pretty well stay together, or some of them in our camp?
No, the Muslim countries liaison with us, and they also fight and argue with each other. It depends if they're regional countries. You know, the Turks may spy on the Iranians, the Azerbaijanis may liaison with Iranians and also spy on them. The Egyptians are looking over their shoulder.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Mr. John Quirk. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening, Mr. John Quirk, and we're simply talking about how the intelligence agencies work throughout the world. You know, one of the things that's always really amazed me is the fact that our intelligence agencies said that, you know, they had no idea there was going to be an attack in the United States, and yet my understanding is that the Israelis had told us the attack was coming, the Germans told us it was coming, the Jordanians, the Moroccans, the Russians had told us it was coming, even Mullah Omar had told us the attack was coming in the United States, and our intelligence agency said, oh, shucks, we had no idea it was coming in the United States. How could that be?
Well, it's a huge intelligence failure, and probably there's several reasons for it. For many years, both the Saudis and the Pakistanis were kind of in our hip pocket. We trained them, we liaison with them. Their intelligence officers trained at the CIA base in Virginia at Camp Perry and in Langley. The chiefs of police from Saudi Arabia and Pakistan trained at the FBI Academy at Quantico. And for many, many years, we took for granted that both the Pakistanis and the Saudis would tell us anything of a nature of bin Laden or trouble with Taliban that we've seen as a result of Pakistan not giving us information. And what's happened today, Islamic fundamentalism has insinuated itself into many of the 26th Islamic intelligence services. So what you might have today, for instance, in the Egyptian service, which works very closely with the United States and England, you still may have five or six or maybe more Egyptian intelligence officers that are actually supplying information to us and also supplying information to the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. So it's very, very difficult to say one service completely works with us, because in that service there could be double agents who work with the opposition. And this is the nature of what's happening in the terrorist world today. We know that many of the terrorist organizations have links to intelligence officers in the Muslim countries.
Well, of course, one of the things that really disturbs me and really worries me is that the influence of this radical form of Islam, which had been more or less dormant for several hundred years, really has only come to light probably in the last 25 years, even though the Muslim Brotherhood was a factor. It certainly was not a major factor until more recently. But this whole Islamic, radical form of Islam, fundamentalist Islam, seems to be growing. Hold just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Mr. John Quirk, and I was just commenting about my concern about the growth of this radical form of Islam over the last, say, 25 years or so. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, we've been fighting, the West has been actually fighting Islam going back to the Crusades, and Islamic armies drove way up into Spain during, you know, the 15th and 16th centuries until El Cid defeated them. Even before that, they drove into France. They almost took over France until the Battle of Poitiers, in which Charles Martel the Hammer defeated them. Islamic armies drove all the way up into what is Yugoslavia today, near Kosovo. And of course, the Ottoman Empire, which was Islam, controlled a good part of the Arab, what we know now as the Arab world. So it's been dormant, it comes back and forth, but today you have several problems. You have radical Islam and imams teaching at these madras schools and Wahhabi schools, teaching the Quran. They don't learn math or science or have relations with women. They basically learn hatred about the West, particularly America and Israel, and they just are the basis and seeds for terrorism.
But are most of those schools actually in Pakistan?
No, they're in Saudi Arabia. They're heavily in Saudi Arabia. They're in Pakistan, and they're throughout a certain amount of tolerance through all of the Arab countries.
All right.
Secular, tough secular countries like Algeria and Egypt, Morocco, Tunisia keep an eye on them. Where they've proliferated is Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. And they are basis for terrorism against the West. And you have another problem. You have the increase of demographics where you have large numbers, millions of young Arab men that go to these schools, and if they don't go to the schools, they're out of work, they have no hope, they have no future, they live in poverty, and they learn hatred.
Well, of course, this is really more or less a new phenomenon. Isn't this really something more in the last 25 years or so?
Yeah, it's increased dramatically in the last 25 years, and it's a radical interpretation of the Quran. It's fundamentalist Islam.
Well, now, of course, my understanding is that this movement is really growing very rapidly in Pakistan. It's growing very rapidly in Egypt and in Turkey and in really so many of the Muslim nations. Is that a valid observation?
Yeah, it's a valid observation. And what's happened, it's kind of the metamorphosis has been that it was growing to the point where we saw the overt display of attacks by terrorist groups in bin Laden, the expansion of the Taliban, and now what's happening, it's going underground and they're operating in the cell structure. It's still growing, but it's very hard to identify it because the cell structure is designed to operate intelligence officers, if you will, as terrorists, to learn how to communicate, to learn how to obtain weapons, to learn how to communicate with money, and gradually attack certain targets that they've identified in the West or even in secular Muslim countries like Egypt or Morocco.
Well, of course, one of my concerns is that our southern border here in the United States is like a sieve, and certainly there's evidence, a great deal of evidence, to suggest that many thousands, if not tens of thousands, of Islamic people have come in across our southern border, and those who were certainly picked up by our border patrol people are told to come back for a hearing, and they never do. So we may have certainly at least 10,000, perhaps far more than that, of people from Islamic countries that support terrorism here in the United States. Do you think that they are a threat, or some of these people are a threat to America?
Yes, I think the threat has increased since 9/11 because the base for a lot of the transiting has been Venezuela and other parts of Latin America, where there are large numbers of Iranian, Iraqis, terrorist groups allied to radical groups from Pakistan or even from Saudi Arabia or Afghanistan have come in, set up bases, they've bought houses, they've set up businesses, engage in a variety of illegal activities as well as legal activities, and certain countries like Venezuela have given them sanctuary, they've given them passports. One time 50,000 Venezuelan passports disappeared. So yes, they are in the United States, but I would say that if you look at percentages, there's probably, it's hard to identify this, but probably less than 5% are related to Al-Qaeda. Most of the terrorist cells that are here now are Iranian, and they've had time to set up. As you know, Iran is the main country for terrorism. They support Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad. They're a fundamentalist state, and of course, along with their parallel development of their nuclear program, they've set up defensive strategies to strike back at the United States should the United States take military action someday against their nuclear plans.
Now, of course, I think one of the most interesting things that you've covered, and you're very well acquainted with the Venezuelan problem, is the close relationship between Hugo Chavez and Venezuela and the current Iranian government and the president, Ahmadinejad. I have a hard time pronouncing that. But you know who I'm speaking of. Ahmadinejad.
That's a pretty good try, yes.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, apparently the Venezuelans are working very, very closely with the Iranians. And, sir, I would be much more concerned about the threat, to the United States from Venezuela, especially, if there are technicians there. And what about missiles, things like that? Is Venezuela getting any missiles that might be a threat to America?
Well, I've talked to a number of the CIA station chiefs in the region and also other military attachés, not only from America, but from other services, the French service who operate there, as well as Muslim services. And everyone kind of agrees that a crisis is looming. Now, Venezuela has been very bombastic through Chavez. He's invited FARC, the terrorist group, in. Cubans run his political campaigns, and they run his intelligence service, DSIP, as well as his military. The Chinese are building two megaports there. Al-Qaeda has trained on Cerro Mate number 7 on the Isle of Margarita. Hezbollah has an office. Hamas, visited several weeks ago. So there's been large numbers of Iranians and Libyans already transiting and setting up base in Venezuela. The disturbing problem is about 6 to 8 months ago, Iranian nuclear physicists, researchers, and engineers went to work at a place called IVIC, which is the Venezuelan Nuclear Reactor Facility. And it is very disturbing that they are there. And Chavez, the other day, he continues to threaten the United States. I mean, every day there's a new threat. But he basically said, hey, listen, if Iran is attacked by America, he will do something against the United States. Now, he won't do it overtly through his military, because our military would, Venezuelans are just no match for the United States. But he would do it covertly by giving some kind of aid to an existing terrorist group or cell that's already based there. And that's the big fear, that if we do attack Iran, we have to watch for our soft underbelly, and that's Venezuela.
Well, because the thing is that no country in the world can stand up to our military, but America has some very real financial problems. We're the largest debtor nation in the world, and we're totally dependent on our enemies to finance our debt. Mm-hmm. I think our real weakness is certainly not militarily. It is certainly financial. Certainly, this could be disrupted by if there was a concerted effort on the part of a number of countries to do it, couldn't it?
Yes. Well, you see, the one major thing that Bin Laden accomplished, he has energized people, small terrorist groups. Some of them don't have any names now. They're not just Al Qaeda. They're new people. To try to obtain a weapons of mass destruction and deploy it in the United States. Now, if you have somebody like Chavez helping them covertly, it raises the stakes. The other thing, mentioning economics, is that both the Iranian government and the Venezuelan government have done scenarios, intelligence analytical scenarios, determining what it would take to really destroy the American economy. Would it be cutting off our oil? Would it be placing a weapons of mass destruction in just one city in the United States? Or could it be a series of conventional-type bombings against shopping centers and possibly icons? So they know, because we're a capitalist country, our weak spot is economics, is the financial situation. And that's where they have the greatest strength as a small power or a small country to damage the United States.
And I really think that this is something that most people are totally unaware of. They cannot imagine that with our tremendous military strength, why we could be vulnerable at all financially. But I really fear that this is the soft underbelly of our current society. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with it. And there's a number of very strange elements. You know, the Chinese are funding and buying a lot of our treasury bonds. The Russians are using their energy to possibly they cut off oil and natural gas to the Ukraine a couple months ago, and they're squeezing the English and the Germans, and the Poles are furious. So it's energy, and it's not just Arab countries that we have to watch out for.
In fact, I think most of our listeners don't understand that certainly Russia is one of the largest oil and natural gas. I think number two, isn't that, in the world?
Yes.
And so the average Americans really doesn't understand that our enemies, and believe me, I believe Russia is still our enemy, are accumulating tremendous wealth. Russia, China, and even Venezuela. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Mr. John Quirk, and we're talking really about what's going on in our society. And you were mentioning a little earlier the danger of terrorist cells here in the United States, predominantly Iranian terrorist cells. A lot of these have been here for a long time, haven't they?
Well, I think over the last few years, you know, there's large amounts of Iranians that live here, but most of them are good Americans. They've been here a long time. They fled in the 70s, and they've built up businesses, and they've become certainly Americanized and Americans. the recent Iranians that have transited through Europe and from Canada and Mexico and Venezuela, they're here for a specific purpose, and it's to defend Iran against an attack by the United States. And every day you see the problems that we're having with Iran, that the UN is having with Iran, that Europe is having with Iran. Iran is not backing off. They say they want to develop just a peaceful nuclear program. It is a sham. It's a lie. They want to develop nuclear weapons. They already have missiles that could be deployed against our fleet in the Seventh Fleet in the Persian Gulf. They have missiles that could hit far as Paris, possibly London, and certainly they could hit Israel. So they are on a fast track to develop nuclear weapons, and they're not going to stop. And we are in a race with them. Well, over the last few days, Mr. Rumsfeld and Mr. Cheney have come out very, very aggressive against Iran.
Of course, certainly there are certain people that really seem to be working behind the scenes that have a lot of information. Michael Ledeen, who was a National Security Council during the Reagan administration, and certainly one of the major architects, I believe, of the current Middle East policy. Michael Ledeen says he thinks they already have some weapons. Probably they bought them somewhere. They may not be a full power, but they would be nuclear weapons at terrible devastation, especially if launched against very tiny Israel. And certainly Ken Timmerman, who was an investigative reporter for Inside Magazine, has made that statement, as has Joseph Podolsky. Do you think that Iran may already have at least a small number of nuclear weapons they purchased on the open market?
You know, it's hard. It's really hard to tell, and our intelligence is so controversial. The CIA says they will not have them for 4 to 5 years. The DIA says they may have them in 2 or 3 years. A lot of our counterintelligence services in this country that work anti-terrorist believe that they could already have one or smuggled across the border. The fact is, we really don't know, and probably there's 5 or 6 reports on the president's desk that all contradict each other. What is strange, which may lead one to believe that they already have them, they already have their deployment in place. They have several very sophisticated, accurate missiles that they got technology from China, North Korea, and Pakistan, and they're already ready to deploy. And in usual, when people develop missiles versus the weapons that go in them, they usually develop the weaponry first, and then later they develop the accuracy of the missiles. In this case, the Iranians already have several kinds of missiles that could hit Tel Aviv, could hit Paris and London, and could hit our fleet. So their deployment is ready, and that's very, very disturbing. So possibly Ledeen and Timmerman could be right. But the government position from the intelligence service...
Hold that thought for just a minute,
several
please.
Years away.
All right, well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Kirk was just talking about the possibility that Iran could have already acquired some nuclear weapons, and we just don't know. There's a number of people, fairly reliable usually, who say they already have at least a limited number of weapons, but the significant thing is they have the delivery systems. In other words, they have some very, very accurate... Are those intermediate or long-range missiles? Do we have any idea?
No, they're not cruise missiles. No. They're intermediate ballistic missiles.
All right, fine. But of course, that would mean that our fleet, our Seventh Fleet that's stationed over there, could be very vulnerable, to nuclear attack, or at least to attack by these very accurate missiles.
Yes, that's right. If we had 60 ships in the Persian Gulf, which we usually do, transiting in and out. A well-placed nuclear weapon in the Persian Gulf, in the water, could probably take out most of our fleet. A weapon of 60 megatons would not only destroy Tel Aviv, it would take out probably or destroy most of Israel and the surrounding areas, and it certainly would take out a city like Paris. And what's interesting, both the Israelis and even the Chirac government have warned Iran that they would use nuclear weapons. So The French are watching them. The Israelis are watching them. A lot of our allies in the region, like the Azerbaijanis, are watching them. And very soon, the crisis with Iran is going to be full-fledged, especially if the UN Security Council votes economic sanctions against Iran.
Well, of course, that's the Security Council. Aren't Russia and China on there? Do you think they would vote economic sanctions against Iran since they have such strong economic ties with them?
No, I don't think they will. Russia has come out and said that diplomacy has to continue for many more months, and China would either abstain like they usually do, or they'd vote against the rest of the members of the Security Council. But I think there's going to be a tremendous momentum by Europe, France, Germany, Belgium, and England, and other members of the UN, to put pressure on both Russia and China to join in at least in economic sanctions against Iran, because Iran constantly walks out of the negotiations. They don't want to stop the development, and they have large numbers, probably 456 sites where some type of nuclear research is going on, and of those, about 50 of the sites can only be for the development of weapons.
So if we were going to strike Iran, why, we would have to hit at least 50 sites, maybe more?
We would hit all 450 sites. Our fleet is equipped now with new updated cruise and Tomahawk missiles. We wouldn't have to invade the country. We wouldn't have to have large numbers of casualties. We are not interested in destroying their cities or the Persian culture, as the mullahs like to say we're trying to destroy. We would do it to stop their nuclear ambitions.
But, of course, wouldn't Iran retaliate? I mean, they're certainly not going to let us attack 450 sites there and kill a few thousand Iranians without retaliating against America.
Yes, they would. Their main retaliation wouldn't be in the sense of an army, although their army could attack us in Iraq, I imagine, or they could try to do something against Kuwait. Kuwait is very worried. So is Saudi Arabia. So is Jordan and Turkey. But they don't have much of an air force. They have a very, very small navy. They do have a large army, but we would not put our army against them. So they would retaliate somehow with terrorism. The other day, the leadership of Iran said they would inflict tremendous harm and pain against America.
Well, don't you think that they're really talking about the terror cells that have been really here in the United States for some time?
That's exactly what they mean, that they would strike against us through terrorism. I mean, it might be attacking our embassies or diplomats overseas or American citizens, but they would try to deliver something to the United States here in this country.
Well, of course, there's certain people like Michael Ledeen and other of the intellectuals who are guiding American policy who think that we could actually create an uprising, that the vast majority of the Iranian people hate the current government, and they would rise up if we could just help them to coordinate an uprising. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Well, it's true that the people hate the regime, but the regime would kill a million Iranians to stay in power. They have a tremendous secret service, a tremendous secret police. They've got the opposition groups penetrated, and I don't think we have a chance stirring up any kind of opposition where they would overthrow the mullahs.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. John Quirk. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Mr. John Quirk, who teaches in a diplomatic school over in Paris. And, of course, his fascinating amount of knowledge helps us better to understand what's going on in the Middle East, and certainly, as it's going to impact on our society. Well, certainly, Mr. Quirk, if we had a number of terrorist attacks here in America, shopping centers, football games, certainly where large numbers of people are concentrated, and, you know, we're dealing with tens of thousands of American deaths. Wouldn't this have a profound impact on the on our economy, on the structure of our society? We saw, you know, what happened after 9/11. You know, and although it was a terrible tragedy and 3,000 people died, but, you know, at least temporarily, while the bottom really dropped out of the stock market, and at least temporarily, why things really sort of shut down.
Yes, and many businesses, for instance, in Florida and the East Coast, went out of business. People lost their homes. People don't talk about that. People stopped traveling. They were afraid to travel over to Europe. Business in the Caribbean boomed for a while, but air travel went down, hotel went down. Even security companies lost money. And, yes, something of a major happening would affect the economy. People would probably stop getting on airplanes. It would stop traveling. They'd be afraid. They'd want to stay at home. It would affect the financial markets. People would hunker down, and, you know, and it depends the extent of such an attack. But we would recover. We'd come back. It would take a long time, probably, but we would do two things we'd have to be careful of to make sure that we didn't retaliate against people that were not involved, and that we didn't retaliate against a major country that we thought might be involved, such as Venezuela. We would have to have evidence and proof. And I think it would be very difficult in some circumstances to control our military.
You mean you think that they might really just act independent of direction from Washington, D.C., and move against Venezuela, you know, even without being ordered to?
Well, I can only tell you that right after 9/11, I had a very good friend of mine in the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he said shortly after 9/11, Iran was put on the list, Libya was put on the list, and Iraq was put on the list. And I don't think it would have taken a lot of evidence to retaliate if it had been a nuclear weapon against us. So this is a danger, and evil people like the Venezuelans and Iranians may be
playing for that. Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Quirk was simply saying that he is concerned that certainly if there was a major attack on America or some sort of a nuclear attack, even if it was a terrorist attack, that there might be elements within the military that would want to retaliate on a wide scale, to get back at the other countries with may or may not have been involved. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, it would be a fair statement, and it could also affect how the military behaves in this country against suspected terrorists here. You know, they're not so worried about things like the Patriot Act and the rules that the CIA and the FBI follow in this country, or the local police. You know, they're military-minded, they're mission-oriented, and we have to be very careful, not so much about, you know, stepping on civil liberties, but on going after people that we don't have a lot of evidence on.
Well, I think that we're entering some very, very dangerous times, and certainly now some people think that this could happen within a matter of weeks or months. Your feeling is that this is really not going to take place until the end of this year or the next year sometime?
Yeah, I think, first of all, there's a political consideration, and that's the November congressional elections, and the Republicans are already saying they're taking some hits because of Bush's policies. Bush's popularity is an all-time low. They're worried about getting reelected. But I think also the Bush administration cannot initiate an attack against Iran ex parte. They're going to have outside pressure. They're going to have members of Congress demand that they take action. They're going to have the European demand that they take action, and possibly also the agreement of the UN. And that's largely because the president and the administration have egg on their face because of Iraq. We didn't find weapons of mass destruction, and it's going to be very difficult unless we have superb intelligence to determine whether the Iranians have nuclear weapons or they don't. And right now, everybody is very quiet. The Israelis are not saying whether they have weapons or not. The CIA is in disagreement and saying they won't have weapons for several years. So as the Iranians get closer, and they will get closer, probably what Bush is hoping to do is, instead of him initiating an action against Iran, he's waiting for Europe, Congress, the Middle Eastern countries of Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Kuwait to demand that we take action. And when he has that large consensus, and he can't be found completely at fault if the intelligence is bad, then the United States will take military action against Iran. And I think that's what's going to play out.
Well, now, of course, Israel is very, very anxious for us to take action, or she's threatening if we don't do it, she will. And there is a great deal of talk of the Israelis saying that, you know, by the end of March, that, and of course, that's, you know, just a few weeks away, and I don't really believe this is true, but there's been a great deal of talk that Israel has said that by the end of March that they would actually have the ability to manufacture nuclear weapons. Is this just a lot of bluster?
No, I think the Israelis are, there's two things here. I think the Israelis are extremely worried because of recent statements by the Iranian president that he said Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth. The other problem the Israelis have, it's a very long journey between Israel and Iran. I mean, Iran is a very big country. You've got cities like Tabriz and Kavoy in the north, you've got Rashta on the coast, you've got Tehran in the middle, you've got Esfahan, and you've got Jerom and Bandar, Bushehr, and so on, and Shiraz, where there's nuclear facilities. It would be very difficult for Israel to take out the 50 major sites, and they probably could miss a lot. Now, this week, they just took delivery of something like $30 million worth of these sophisticated bunker busters, but still it would be very, very difficult. They would have to fly over Iraq, possibly Saudi Arabia. They would have to divert north if they flew over Iraq, and they would have to go very far inside Tehran up to a place called, just south of a place called Ashgabat, and to take out all the 450 plus nuclear facilities, it would be almost impossible, and they would probably take heavy casualties. So it's not a fait accompli that they would attack Iran.
And of course, with the new aircraft missiles that the Russians have just sold Iran, that would make certainly any air attack or traditional air attack much more dangerous. Certainly with our military, we could use Tomahawk missiles and cruise missiles.
And we're much closer.
Right.
The Israelis are, I think it's a 4,200 kilometer round trip, probably more. The Persian Gulf, we're already there. We've got a base in Kuwait. We have a huge base, as you know, in Iraq. And we've got all of our ships in the Persian Gulf, so it would be an attack by Tomahawk and cruise missiles off of our variety of ships, destroyers, aircraft carriers, and submarines.
Well, now, I had called you and asked you about this Hojatiya Society, which is a sect of the Shiite religion that all believes that they can bring back the 12th Imam, who died when he was 6 years old, something like that, in the 9th century, but that it was some sort of a chaotic situation, that they would actually be able to bring back the Mahdi. That, of course, is their counterpart. The wise ruler is going to rule the world and bring everybody into Sharia law, and that Mr. Ahmadinejad really believes he is going to be able to do that. That's the president of Iran that is very close to this sect, and you'd actually looked into that, hadn't you?
Yes, they have, it's really a doomsday sect. They have large numbers of followers in a city called Dezful, and they have other followers in a city called Esfahan, and no one really knows how much influence they have on the mullahs or the military, but they do have some influence. And they believe in the end of the world, and it's got to start with the destruction of Israel. How much influence they really have, no one knows, but they do have members in the Iranian parliament and the Iranian military and the Iranian intelligence service. And again, they're they're fundamentalists and they really believe in it, and they believe, you know, they believe the end of the world is coming, and they also lobby for the development of nuclear weapons. That's the scary thing about this group.
And of course, they really believe that what is going to bring back the Mahdi will be some sort of a world cataclysmic event. Isn't that somewhat of their belief?
Yeah, it's a doomsday cult. It's nobody knows if there's 10,000 people in it or a million. It's a very secretive organization, and they believe in the end of the world.
There's certainly Arne de Borgrave, who's certainly one of my favorite columnists.
Mine too.
And he's written on this subject, and a very, very good article for any of our listeners that would like to read it. It appeared in the Washington Times. We'd be glad to send you a copy of it. And he says, of course, that the current president of Iran is very close to this group, and this may explain some of the totally irrational statements that the president of Iran has made, almost as if he is encouraging an attack on his country, which is, of course, total madness when we're talking about the potential or the possibility of the use of nuclear weapons, and yet he's not acting like a rational man.
No, and going back to Venezuela, Hugo Chavez believes in some of these theories. He believes... I mean, he doesn't have a normal foreign policy or national security plan. I mean, he's another dictator like, you know, the Korean dictator and the Iranian dictator. And they believe that, Chavez believes he wants to be the person to bring America to its knees. And these people are very hard to negotiate with, almost impossible. You can't change their minds. They're fanatics. And they have one thing in common, they have hatred of America. And they are doing things covertly to try to develop something to seriously damage us.
Well, you know, of course, for the last 200 years, we've never had to worry much about anything hurting America. It was Abraham Lincoln said, you know, nobody's going to be able to take a drink from the Ohio, make a mark on the Blue Ridge, not in 1,000 years. But, of course, now that's all changed. We're no longer protected by the oceans. People right here in the Southern Hemisphere intensely hate America. This is a frightening thing. And certainly intercontinental ballistic missiles or even intermediate-range missiles on board a ship could be launched against our cities. And I feel that we are probably moving into the most difficult times in my lifetime. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I agree with it. Several weeks ago, the Pentagon formed a new agency. It's a department or a bureau, and it's a forensic nuclear agency. And what it basically is that they feel that if a nuclear bomb goes off in the United States, these people rush out to find shards or whatever is left of the weaponry, uranium or plutonium, whatever left, so they can identify and give the military options to attack the country that delivered it. Now, part of it is probably a warning to countries like Venezuela that if they think they can covertly assist a terrorist group to deploy a nuclear weapon, they won't be free. We will attack them. But you have people like Venezuela and other evil terrorist groups that either have a nuclear weapon or a weapon of mass destruction or trying to get it in the next year or 2 or 5 years to deliver it and deploy it to the United States. And they believe they can destroy us as a country, destroy our democracy with even one nuclear weapon going off. And that's the goal of people like Iran and Chavez in Venezuela.
Well, certainly in Brazil today you have a Marxist or a very far-left gentleman named Lula, I believe. And my understanding is that, you know, Brazil, probably the largest nation in the Southern Hemisphere, very powerful, certainly a very rich nation in many respects, they are also now working on enriching uranium.
Yes, and the Venezuelans are encouraging other countries in Latin America to do it. They're forming a pact with Argentina and Brazil to, well, what Chavez says is the peaceful uses of nuclear weapons. You know. But if they've signed the non-proliferation agreement and if they follow the International Atomic Energy Commission, they are not permitted to go forward to the development of nuclear weapons. They can only do reactors. And it's strange that the Venezuelans would want to do that because They are sitting on billions of barrels of oil. They don't need nuclear energy. The Brazilians probably don't need it, and the Argentinians don't need it. So it's you have a Marxist leftist government in Venezuela that is encouraging people to do it. And one of Chavez's goals is to destroy the United States. He said it in a number of speeches.
And, of course, he is contributing, I think, what, about 1.7 million barrels of oil a day? What about 6 or 7% of our oil?
No, we get 14.8% of our oil.
Really? We get that much from them?
Yeah, they're the fourth largest oil supplier. It's a special kind of oil, and he's looking to sell most of that to China eventually. He doesn't want to supply it to America.
So he's really doing everything he can then to divorce himself from the United States, and certainly he's very, very critical of everything we have here. And, you know, what can we do about him? Certainly wasn't he democratically elected? We can't try to overthrow him if we really believe in democracy.
Well, we can't overthrow him for two reasons. One, we don't have the ability like we used to. And the second is that, yes, he's democratically elected. We did support a group that was trying to overthrow him. The Venezuelan opposition today is completely penetrated by Cuban intelligence. They're very, very small. And it's going to be very, very difficult to do anything about Mr. Chavez. It's going to be extremely difficult.
But it looks really like all of Southern America is going. We certainly, Bolivia now has recently essentially taken over by a Marxist.
Yes, Evo Morales he represented the drug dealers, the cocaine growers, which in a way is the same thing. And he made a public statement, he's going to drive the Americans crazy. It's interesting, 4 days after he was elected, Cuban intelligence and military came in to train the Bolivian intelligence and military services. So Bolivia is probably going to go to the way of Venezuela. We have problems in Ecuador and Peru. Colombia is doing good in many areas. They're a very strong ally. They're certainly against Mr. Chavez. There's problems in Argentina. There's no problems in Chile. There's problems in Uruguay and Paraguay. And, of course, there's problems starting up again in Central America. Chavez is funding labor unions and student groups, Marxist groups in Panama, Nicaragua, Honduras. And he's even encouraged, ridiculous, but he's encouraged coup d'etats by the military in Mexico, Ecuador, and Peru.
Well, it really sounds like the socialists are going to take over Mexico with the next election.
They could, and that would be extremely bad for the United States, because if they ally themselves with Venezuela, there's no guarantee that they're going to do that. I mean, the Mexicans have been very independent of, you know, traditional Marxists, even though they had relations with Cuba. They broke them off, had them back and forth. But the two of the problems, of course, in Latin America are corruption and poverty. And the United States is looked upon as somebody that encourages that or doesn't do anything against it, when in fact the United States has spent its national treasury trying to develop economic development, building hospitals, schools, working with governments to foster democracy and capitalism, but it's not working in certain countries. And it's a precursor to dictators like Chavez to come in and offer his goofy version of Marxism. I doubt if he's ever even read a book on Marx. He just does everything Fidel Castro tells him to do.
Well, I really feel that we're living in very, very uncertain times. Now, you actually have a website. Would you like to get your website out before we go to our next break?
Yeah, our website is www.diplomaticacademy.org, and then we have an international investigative company, and that's again www.assetlocationinternational.com.
All right, fine. Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Quirk is a fascinating individual with a tremendous grasp of what's going on in the world today, and I really believe we're living in probably the most frightening and most dangerous times that I can remember, and I've been following things pretty close now for about 43 years. We're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program with Mr. John Quirk. Well, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. What are the thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners this evening?
Well, I think we are in a time of crisis and what I call, with other countries, kind of the four C's, with our adversaries and with our friends. It seems to be competition on some areas, competition, cooperation on other areas, and then crisis and conflict. And the key is, of course, diplomacy and negotiation, which the United States is trying to do. I mean, we are a country that stands for freedom and democracy. Sometimes it seems that we're fighting the battles all alone, but we have tremendous allies in both the English-speaking countries, NATO, Europe. We have many, many Muslim countries that are on our side. We are in the process of building up India, which will be a superpower to possibly challenge the Chinese. And of course, I think our policymakers in Washington are probably the most brilliant. People criticize them, they second guess them, but this country has stayed solid and strong for so many years, and I think we'll continue to do that.
Are you concerned about the threat of communist China?
Yes, I think China will be our real, it's already our adversary, it's our enemy to a certain extent. They're not democratizing. We are going to start building up PACCOM in the Pacific. The Chinese want to control all the shipping. Their ultimate goal is to push us out of the Pacific. That's their major foreign policy goal. And they want to control the world economically, politically, and they don't seem to care about democracy. And even though it's a little deceptive because it's a market economy, they're throwing more of that revenue in the missile development. They're building very fast the Blue Water Navy to challenge us. And they're going around the world controlling the shipping lanes. They control both ends of the Panama Canal. They're building megaports in the Caribbean and Venezuela. And, of course, they want that to control first through their maritime merchant marine and then eventually their navy. So the United States and China will be the two big powers to watch over the next 10 years.
All right, fine. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. I know it's getting late back there, but I appreciate your being
here. My pleasure.
Thank you so very much, and we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
And
bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, our guest this evening is Mr. John Quirk, and if you look at what's going on in the world today, the United States corporations and World Bank and International Monetary Fund and Asian Development Corporation and Agency for International Development and American corporations are building up in China the best enemy money can buy. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're really dependent on those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day on radio and on the Internet, and 4 hours on shortwave, and 9 hours, actually, on Telstar 5. And if you don't have access to us any other way, you can always, with a very inexpensive dish and a receiver, pull us down on Telstar 5. And there are people all across the country who are doing that sort of thing. So we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, how do we understand what's going on in the world today? Well, of course, we can look at it purely politically, as we did in our discussion tonight, but I think that you're going to have to look behind that and understand there are powerful spiritual forces at work. There are people in Iran today who want to precipitate a major nuclear war. There are people in Washington, D.C. today who are intent upon creating a major nuclear war, and none of this really makes sense. I mean, why did we really attack Afghanistan? Certainly the Taliban had offered to evict Osama bin Laden from the country, and we wouldn't let them. We wanted to attack, and we were supposed to go in and just get Osama bin Laden, but we've occupied the country. And the same thing is true with Iraq. We were supposed to just go in and get rid of Osama bin Laden, make sure there are no weapons of mass destruction. And then we went in to dissolve the Iraqi army and the police force and the civil service, and refused to give adequate support to the general who was assigned the job of rebuilding the Iraqi army. And we have chaos over there today. And I believe this is not happening by accident, but by intent. So we hope, if you'd like to really understand what's going on, you need to start reading our newsletters. You'll find them posted at RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, and we'll send you a copy of the latest newsletter. There really is an occult hierarchy, spiritual forces working through men who rule the world today. It says so in the Bible. I believe it's true. We have a pamphlet set called The Occult Hierarchy, or you can go to our website and pull down our various articles on the occult hierarchy at RadioLiberty.com. Now, if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, let me suggest that it is available, or you can get a video or the DVD. Then we are today now, as we did about a year and a half ago, offering full cases of our Brotherhood of Darkness. If you'd like to get a full case of the book at a ridiculous price, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We want to get the book reprinted, and this is how we did it in the past. And people then had the books they could literally give away, and we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to getting a case of Brotherhood of Darkness book. It is the best tool I know to begin to introduce people to the idea that there is another dimension. There really are demonic forces at work in the world today that are influencing the course of human history. For we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. So remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, our website, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
For amber.
Well, this is Dr. Sten back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, the supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Well, pretty good. I must say, I'm lucky dog.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, these are certainly some of the most fascinating times I've ever seen, certainly internationally, financially. We certainly have seen a tremendous drop in the price of gold and silver and even platinum here, and you know, in the last week or so. It was almost like somebody was intentionally driving that price down, and you saw the stocks really following along the same path.
Well, you're right about somebody guiding it, because we had some mixed figures coming out, and I think that the central banks, particularly the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government, wanted the market to stay up, and they wanted to keep yields as low as they could, and at the same time, I think they wanted commodities down because they went down. But when you are in a bull market in commodities, first of all, unless you're a professional, you shouldn't be trading the market. And if you're a long-term investor, which you should be, and don't try to figure out all the wiggles, because you're not professionally adept to do that time after time. And so these kinds of volatile corrections are normal. They're very good. They run anywhere between $10 an ounce, we'll take gold, and as much as 40 or 50. But most people weren't alive when we had the last bull market in gold, which ended in 1980. Old fogies like us were, but most everybody else wasn't. And so they don't remember that gold went up $100 one day and down $100 the next. So I tell people, when they see corrections like this in gold, in particular because silver held up fairly well, they should set either initial positions in some gold and silver-related asset, or they should take advantage of the price coming down and doing some more buying. Incidentally, one of the interesting things is that there's a tremendous short position in both silver and gold, and particularly gold at this stage, and there's been a lot of short covering in the past couple of days, and not anywhere near the total, but more than normal. And on today, Friday, what happened was that gold was down over $5, and most all of the gold stocks and silver stocks were up.
I noticed that. So why was that?
Because I think they're anticipating that the correction's over.
Uh-huh.
And usually on Friday you have short covering too, which means people have bet a stock is going to go down, and they don't want to stay short over the weekend, afraid of what might happen, so they buy their position back in and hopefully take a profit.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And if you, of course, you follow the gold and silver markets, you follow what's happening financially, it is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. It's all manipulated. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I need to remind you, I am not a professional forecaster. I've just been watching this for 43, 44 years now, and I have a pretty good feel for what's going on. And obviously, why gold is in a major gold market, bull market, as is silver, and certainly all the commodities are. But the whole world is really facing real problems. And we find, for instance, that all the countries throughout the world are beginning to raise their interest rates, because they've got to do something to stop this massive increase in liquidity. I mean, we have something like $500 trillion in property values. It's only the M3 of all of our currency, and all the derivatives of our currency are only about $10.3 trillion, the M3. So all of this is just artificial liquidity, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's not only the United States, and I want to interject this here. Each week I put out all the figures on what the U.S. numbers are as far as liquidity and the increases in the money supply and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, shortly, the Federal Reserve is going to stop releasing those figures, at least on M3. And I can't blame them, because this week's figures are incredible. The amount of creation of money rocketed again, up $28.3 billion for a week now, mind you.
And what was the total you had?
$10,361 billion.
No, actually, I was $61 billion off. $10,361 billion. That's a lot of money. A trillion here, a trillion there. Pretty soon, you're talking about real money.
You're right. Well, year on year, M3 has expanded $150.9 billion, or 8.5% annualized. In over 52 weeks, it's inflated $823 billion, or 8.6%.
And of course, the incredible thing is, on one hand, they're raising interest rates to control inflation. On the other hand, they're massively expanding the amount of money to increase inflation. Doesn't make sense.
Well, it does if you understand what they're up to.
All right, well, you're going to have to tell us.
And that's why they don't want this M3 figure to be printed anymore, because there's too many publications following it, professional publications. The public gets it through my publication and a couple of others, and that's it. I mean, people wouldn't know what was going on if it wasn't for us, and now...
Hold that right there.
Cut us off.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we're in real trouble financially. The M3 figure is $10.36 trillion. $10,360 some trillion. So you have to understand that we're massive amounts of money are out there. But what Bob is pointing out is that they're increasing the money supply about 8%. Now, on one hand, they're raising the interest rates to slow down inflation and control inflation. On the other hand, they're actually putting more and more money into the economy, which is highly inflationary. So how do you correlate the two, Bob?
Well, that's only part of the story, because bank credit has catapulted in a week, mind you, $24.1 billion to a record $7.661 trillion, with a year-to-date gain of $155 billion, or 11.9%. And if you put the M3 and the bank credit for 1 week together, you've got $52.4 billion. And this is incredible. I mean, this is an annualized rate of over 12%. And so what they're going to do here, because they don't have any other choice and there's no way back now, is they're going to continue to do this in secret, because they're not going to release the figures. Well, I can promise you we'll get the figures. They may be a little later, they may be not in the same week, but we'll get them. And the question was about other nations and liquidity, and all the other nations, almost all, are all increasing money and credit at a 8 to 10% rate. So they're all doing the same thing.
Now, but they're also all beginning to raise their interest rates. Certainly we see interest rates going up in Japan and in Europe as well.
Well, the ECB raised the interest rates a quarter of a point for the first time in 5 years. Japan went up a quarter of a point yesterday. In fact, I wrote a special article, which is in the International Forecast of this week, for another publication that asked me to, my take on what was going on with Japan and the yen carry trade and things like that. But it's out of control. And also, the BIS and others are talking about how they are going to put all the central banks together so that they can engineer and manage a soft landing for the dollar. And the dollar is going to get down somewhere between 30% and 50%.
Now, what period of time do you anticipate that happening, Bob?
I would say it'll take 3 years once it breaks.
Now, Sydney, can you separate M3 from the amount of money that the banks are increasing? In other words, doesn't M3 include the bank, what the banks do in the way of loans and things like that?
In part, but not in total.
Okay, so then you can.
And so there's a lot of liquidity created outside of that within the banking system. But there's another step there. And that is, liquidity is created today by the investment banking and brokerage industry.
You're talking about the stock market.
Right. And also, you're talking about the creation of derivatives. This is $270 trillion. I mean, it's beyond anybody's wild imagination. There's no regulation. And they are 6 to 8 months behind in settlement on billions of dollars worth of derivatives. Nobody knows who wrote what for whom, and they call them fails to deliver. The system's really in extraordinary trouble, and from here on out, it'll be one problem after another.
And of course, so you've got your stock market that's creating liquidity. You've got your housing market that's creating liquidity. Do we have any idea how much liquidity there is actually in the stock market?
Well, I would say probably somewhere in the vicinity of probably about $20 trillion. I have the figures on it. I'm just guessing.
But how about
the real estate market? It's about 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in that vicinity.
That's really all there is in the real estate market?
Yeah. But again, I don't have those figures. But I do want to say this, that interest rates continue to climb. The mortgage rates for the 30-year fixed this week were 6.37. I think, first of all, the 10-year has been suppressed by buying by the Fed and other central banks. They try to keep that rate down, the yield down, so they could keep the mortgage rates down. And so where we're headed here is, I think, and I'm positive we'll get two more quarter point increases, but I think we're going to get two more after that. We're going to go up a point from here. So you're looking at mortgage rates going up another point, which would put them at 7 7 3/8 for the 30-year fixed.
Okay, and of course, as the interest rate goes up on homes, it becomes increasingly more difficult for people to buy homes and to make the payments on them. That would be a fair assessment?
Yeah, and the important thing is that there's a lot of people who have 1, 2, and 3-year adjustable rate mortgages that are coming due this year and next year and the year after. And some of them have little or no equity in their homes, because they bought near the top of the market. And they're looking at 50% increases in the cost of their house payments. And if you add in the fact that if they have credit cards, their minimum payment has just jumped from $200 to $400 a month, so, and that's a minimum. So if you had a $600 Yeah, $600 a month mortgage. It would probably move up to $1,000. You tack on the other $200, you get a doubled payment, and people can't handle that.
Well, you know,
the foreclosures are already begun. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Well, of course, it was very interesting. I was listening to the latest economic forecast. It was coming over the air, and it was saying that government is just so pleased we're producing more jobs, 235,000 jobs this last month. Isn't it wonderful? And we're just getting all these jobs, and people are making more money, and the economy is great. Are they telling the truth?
No, they're not. I've got some numbers here on the which are for tomorrow's forecaster. And they relate to the number of jobs created, and they're trying to tell us, I think the figure is 110,000 jobs were created in the construction industry, and we know that the, it's 110,000 new construction jobs were created in the dead of winter, with builders reporting plummeting sales and order cancellations.
Are you suggesting that they're making up statistics?
No, I am guaranteeing you. Started in 1986, and it's evolved. In fact, the most effective statistical liars, we'll call them, via the Bureau of Labor Statistics, was the Clinton administration. And they got it down to a fine art. These guys in there now aren't that good. But they're totally unbelievable if you stop and think of it. And economists and analysts won't say anything because they'll lose their jobs. You know, everything is go, 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 the economy's going to be great, et cetera, et cetera. And that isn't true. And they can't say anything. And that's why economists and analysts are right one-third of the time.
You would think they'd be right half the time, at least.
When you can flip a coin and do better than they
right.
do.
Well, you know, I share your concern, and I'm really very, very concerned that, you know, if you look and analyze those jobs as Paul Craig Roberts has done, and the jobs we're getting is construction, but then, of course, they're in waitress and bartender and the health industry, but very, very few manufacturing jobs. In fact, you have to have, 100,000 jobs a month, something like that, simply just to keep up with the growth of the labor force and new people coming in. Do you have what those figures would be, how much you have to have every month just to so you don't go further behind?
Yeah, it's about 220,000 jobs.
220,000 jobs just to meet the growth in the population and the people graduating from school wanting a job?
Well, there's another factor, too, which is the a number of people who illegally cross the border into the United States every month, and that probably runs a couple of 100,000 a month as well. In fact, I saw on CNN Lou Dobbs tonight, the illegal aliens had a rally of 100,000 people in downtown Chicago demanding that the new House bill be defeated. It's the one that wants to. It's the stronger and better of the bills.
And
pardon me?
Go right ahead.
And they want that rescinded because they feel it's an imposition on them, beside the fact that they're here illegally. And one of the very, very disturbing things, and I think one of the things that they should not have been doing for their own good, is a great many of them were carrying Mexican flags. And I don't think that's going to fit very well with the American public.
In fact, I had a friend of mine call me this morning who's in Chicago who told me this spontaneous demonstration, anybody thinks it's a spontaneous demonstration, really doesn't understand. It's a communist-led demonstration, but then who funds the communists? Nobody ever asked that. But, of course, they were blocking traffic. They were just shutting down downtown Chicago today. And here the illegal aliens are demonstrating for their rights. And as my wife said, why don't you just get about 5,000 buses and just put them in there and take them down across the border and dump them off? But you wouldn't expect the Bush administration to do that, because they're dedicated globalists. They want to destroy the sovereignty of this nation. That's why they don't enforce the laws. I'd go after the major corporations that are hiring illegal aliens against the violation of the law. Well, Bob, pick up the story from there.
Well, you also have to consider that the party in power, which is PAN in Mexico, the president of that party and most of the people at the level are all elitists. And people who are wealthy and what it, there is of the middle class are very unhappy with them. And I believe that the next president of Mexico will be the man from a very small party called PRD, and his name is Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, and he's the former mayor of Mexico City. He's very, very popular, particularly among the downtrodden. He's a socialist, he's a populist, and he's going to blow the other two parties away. He'll win in a landslide. And it's a part of the move to the left throughout Central and South America, and that really can't be helped. Because on the opposite of the spectrum, we have elitists who are running our government and who have been looting these countries for years. I mean, hundreds of years. And so finally, all of these nations said, well, look, we can go over here to the left and we're not going to get any hurt. Any more hurt than we are already. So let's give it a try. And that's why they're doing what they're doing. But they've been driven to it.
But of course, what we're talking about is almost all of South America is on the other camp now. I mean, certainly Argentina, Brazil, Venezuela, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia now has gone over with Morales. So basically, we're losing all of South America. Now we're talking about Mexico as well. And the same movements are sweeping up through the Central America as well. So American policy is, the chickens are coming home to roost. And who knows, here in America, by 2008, it may be that you wouldn't even be able to get a Republican dog catcher elected. Because, of course, the Republicans have turned about to be the biggest spenders in all recorded history. They dwarf anything that Bill Clinton did, as bad as he was.
And they're also the most corrupt in history. And it's extremely disappointing for you and I because I voted Republican my entire life. But, I see feedback from thousands of people who have the same background. And they're all saying the same thing. We'll vote for Mickey Mouse before we'll vote for these people who are in office or aspiring to office, who are in the two major parties who are just going to continue to drill us because they're either crooks or they're a bunch of heartless people.
Well, I think we've got real problems in our country. Of course, one of the biggest problems is the moral breakdown in America. And after all, if there is no God, if there is no absolute, there is no right and wrong, why shouldn't you go ahead and, if you're a politician, and take money out of the table? What we need, of course, in government are people who fear God. And until we get back to that sort of a situation, until our ministers start teaching the fear of God rather than, just everything's lovey and everything's fine and all you got to do is just love one another, why, we're going to continue having corruption because man's heart is basically corrupt and evil. And this is one of the things our founding fathers believed, and that's why they limited the power of government, saying you could never trust people with power. Because if men were angels, of course, you wouldn't need government at all. And why would you take one corrupt person and put him or in control of another corrupt person? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman. We're talking about really what's happening to our economy. And certainly it looks to me like they're going to end up destroying the value of our currency. Bob, what happens if other countries begin to start saying, we don't want the American dollar? If we were to have a few major terrorist attacks and the remnant of our economy begins to collapse, even though we may be a powerful nation militarily, I mean, how long is the rest of the world going to continue using the American dollar?
Well, it's going to start to diminish, and those monies will end up in and pounds and Swiss francs and euros and in gold. And if, you know, like, let me give you an example. The oil-producing nations in the Middle East are buying third-world bonds. Now, emerging country bonds have done handsomely over the past 3 years. And the failure rate is like 1.67, which is the lowest in the last 15 or 20 years. They're buying right at the top of the market, and they are buying in other currencies. Now, if they think that these other currencies are going to do any better than the dollar, they're mistaken. Because the what happens to the American economy affects the entire world. We go down, the whole world's going with us in varying degrees. And so gold has broken out in all currencies, and particularly the major currencies. That means that gold is saying, we're better, I am better than you, Mr. Currency. And that is going to feed upon itself. And there's going to come a time where there'll be a mad rush to get out of any currency into gold of one form or another. And silver, for that matter, as long as it's hyperinflation. And we are going into hyperinflation while we have a recession and a depression.
Well, that's
this
the
is going to be the worst of all worlds.
Right. In fact, go ahead.
And so that's why I push so hard for people to purchase gold and silver-related assets. It's the most important thing you can do besides getting yourself out of credit card revolving and vehicle debt, because there's a good chance in the next year or two that one of you breadwinners are going to lose your job, and maybe you'll be able to keep your house if you've got rid of that extra debt.
And I really think we're moving into some very, very difficult and dangerous times for our country. And, of course, I'm really even more concerned because of this insane desire on the part of our leaders to attack Iran. Now, if they're really worried about the nuclear threat, why aren't they worried about the fact that Brazil is beginning to enrich their uranium? Why aren't they worried about China, communist China, that we're pouring all this money into? They've actually threatened to nuke our cities. And, you know, so why are we so intent upon going to war with Iran? It really doesn't make any sense. Pakistan to the south of Iran has nuclear weapons. China to the east of Iran has nuclear weapons. Russia to the north of Iran has nuclear weapons. Israel has nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia has nuclear weapons that have gotten from Pakistan. But, my goodness, we couldn't possibly allow Iran to have nuclear weapons. Something's wrong with this picture.
Yeah, well, it's an excuse. And number one, they want to stop them from opening up the Iranian oil bourse, which will trade in oil, will trade in euros, which will affect the reserve status of the dollar over a period of time. It'll weaken it because people won't accumulate dollars to pay their oil bills. They'll accumulate some other country currency, perhaps euros. And the second reason is that Israel says that they're a threat. Well, you know, India and Pakistan are every bit as big a threat, and they both have very large armies. And so, you know, that really doesn't wash. You know, if you look back at the international forecaster, in 2000, when I get everybody out of the stock market and got them into gold and silver-related assets, and they've all made scads of money, believe me, I said that there would be a war in Iraq, and it would be done as a cover for what will end up being a failing economy. Well, of course, first they went into Afghanistan and in Iraq. And I said that they will have what Trotsky said, perpetual revolution, or perpetual war for perpetual peace, the same thing. And that's what they're up to right now.
And I agree with you totally. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. And when we get back, if you'd like to give us a call, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we're on the verge of some very difficult times. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is, of course, Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. We're talking about what is happening as far as our markets are concerned. And certainly we find that General Motors is cutting back tremendously. What's going to happen to General Motors, do you think? They're head over heels in debt. Their debt has been decreased to, just a junk level. Do we have any idea how much money General Motors has actually gone out and borrowed, and what their equity to debt ratio is? Do you have any idea what that would be?
No, I don't, but it's not very good. And the reason I say that is because of the ratings keep on dropping by Fitch, Standard & Poor's, and Moody's. And as I've said on the program before, back in 1980, they began to program GM and Ford for extinction, and these are the people who control these companies, and that's because they wanted to keep the brand name and move the production to places like India and China and Mexico and so on, and they would make more money that way, and at the same time they could accomplish what they wanted to accomplish regarding the American economy. Americans will not accept world government. And the only way to get them to do it is put them on their knees financially. And that's what these people are doing to us right now. And so that's part of the whole scheme. And this business of major corporations going under, it has been and continues to be deliberately planned that way.
I think you're absolutely right. In fact, we have a tape set called The New Order of the Barbarians, and it's based upon a talk that was given in 1969 by Dr. Richard Day, who was the medical director of Planned Parenthood, who told a group of doctors at that time it was the plan to shift automobile production to the Japanese, and they were going to actually have better Japanese cars and poor American cars so that people would buy Japanese cars, which doesn't really make sense. And in 1969, I'm sure the people who heard that talk were just saying that couldn't be. And yet, of course, this is exactly what we see today. So I have a feeling there's a lot of long-range planning, don't you think, Bob?
Yes, I wrote about that in 1967. In the first published article I ever wrote, which was in the American Mercury, and I outlined what I just talked about, and how it was going to come about. It was the only way they could get America, and in fact Europe and Canada as well, to accept world government, and that is by destroying their economies.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest, of course, is Bob Chapman. And before we go on, Bob, I want you to get your telephone number, or at least your website out, and your email site, and your telephone number.
Well, for those who would like a free copy of the International Forecaster, either by email or in hard copy, the hard copy comes out twice a month, and the email comes out every week. And it's about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. That toll-free number is 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For those who'd like to go to my site on the Internet, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. And we do have an email address for those who would like to write to us, and that address is international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go to George, who's calling us from Toronto. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. I have two quick questions, and I'll listen to the answers off the air.
could you tell me, is it all right to buy gold and silver certificates from the bank? And the second question is, do you think that there will be a confiscation of gold bullion by the government? Thank you.
All right, fine. Thanks very much. And first of all, what about buying gold and silver certificates?
Well, my feeling is it's just like paper gold. And I think people's first line of defense should be gold and silver coins. My preference in this stage of the bull market in gold and silver is numismatic gold coins that are graded and 90% silver bags. I also advocate the use of stocks. I've specialized in them for many, many years, and so I know lots about them. And in fact, when I was on with you a couple of months ago, you asked me about my new one, and I gave it to you, and it just doubled, which I'm happy to say for all of the people.
Was that the Crystal X?
No, that's a company called Rainy River. And that just went from 85 cents to about $1.65 or so. That's got a long way to go, though. But anyway, to answer the gentleman's question, I am not a big advocate of certificates in gold themselves at a bank. I think you're much, much better off taking delivery of coins. As far as confiscation is concerned, if the government wants to confiscate anything, they'll do it. You see the way that they twist the laws. And under the law, they can confiscate gold. Gold coins, gold bullion. And so a good part of what you have in gold, I would take delivery, and I would personally buy coins, numismatic as well as bullion, and hide them. And if they want to come around and collect them, tell them you don't have any. And the same thing goes with weapons. And I think the gentleman was from Canada. They spent about $5 or $10 billion or whatever the insane figure was collecting everybody's guns, and they probably only get about 20% of them. And so people aren't going to easily turn their gold and silver in, nor are they going to turn their weapons in. Some will, but most won't. And they've learned from the past. So really the answer to the question is, number one, I don't like gold certificates as such, especially held with a bank. Because if the bank goes, are you ever going to collect? We just saw that happen with REFCO. And also, as far as the confiscation is concerned, the answer is yes, they can. And they can do anything they want, or try to do anything they want.
And so I think, George, there's your answer. We're living in times when we have governments that don't obey the law, that basically are interested in one and only one thing, and that is impoverishing the people and controlling the people. And those of you who haven't read the wonderful essay written by Alan Greenspan back in 1965, you'll find it in our little pamphlet entitled The History of Money. But basically he said, you know, the secret of the welfare state is that they don't want you to have anything of any inherent value. And the reason they don't want you to have gold is because they want to confiscate your wealth. If there was anything else that had value, well, they would make it illegal. And that, of course, is what they don't want you to know. That, in essence, is what he said. And I really think that it's important that people understand that there is an organized effort on the part of a ruling elite to control the masses, and the last thing they want is for them to have a means of protecting their wealth. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, I think it is, and it doesn't matter what ism it comes under. They're all bad. The only good kind of government is a Republican form of government in a republic, and that's the only thing that really works for the people, and the rest of them, you can forget it.
Okay, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, why give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Bob about his thoughts about what's going on, and certainly he's been at this for a long time, and what you're seeing is a totally manipulated economy. But you're also seeing an economy that is being intentionally destroyed. There is an organized, orchestrated, coordinated effort to ship American jobs and factories and technology and wealth overseas. Would you agree or disagree with that, Bob?
Well, absolutely. And particularly seeing it in the loss of jobs with outsourcing and offshoring. Offshoring is the moving of companies, and outsourcing is the moving of jobs. And it's going to continue unless we stop it.
In fact,
and what's the answer? There is only one answer, and that is tariffs. And you got to remember, before 1962, America's history, its success, was based upon, in part, the tariff system. And sometimes the tariffs, like during the 1930s, they were very low. They were anywhere between 1 and 20%, and most of them were in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5% area. There's been other times where we've had 3, 4, 5, 600 percent tariffs, depending upon what they were. And they call that fair trade, not free trade. Free trade's a disaster except for transnational conglomerates. They're the only ones that make any money at it. And that's what part of this is about. And so, as long as we continue not to have tariffs, and I'm not saying the tariffs are the final answer, but it's something we have to do now and do quickly. Otherwise, we're not going to have a country left.
In fact, I think it was so interesting. I think it was just this last week when President Bush was over in India, of course, certainly giving them our nuclear technology and agreeing to do that. And, of course, in the process, antagonizing the people in Pakistan, which is will certainly ensure the overthrow of Musharraf, which will turn, of course, their nuclear weapons and their intercontinental missiles over to the radical Islamists. But the president knows what he's doing. And he said, oh, isn't it outsourcing American jobs to India? That's just going to strengthen the American economy. And I'm thinking, does anybody really believe that?
Well, I don't think most people think about it. I mean, I don't know what people think about anyway. I mean, most of them don't think. I mean, it's just incredible. You tell them over and over again, just simple facts, and they just don't want to hear it.
Well, that's our job, and what you do and what I do is try to get people to think, and at least our listeners, hopefully many of them are beginning to make their plans accordingly. Well, let's go to Dale, who's calling us from Washington. What part of Washington are you in, Dale?
Northeastern Washington, foothills of the Cascades.
Okay, fine. Well, it's good to have you with us. What can we do for you?
I've got a question for your guest. With all of the situations that we see on the horizon, do you see the likely scenario that we're going to come through our current situation and still have a democracy in a form of government? And or do you see a more likely scenario that this thing is just going to continue on in a slow fashion, and we're going to muddle through this thing?
Well, there'll be no muddling through. The people who are in power, and it doesn't make any difference which party it is, they want world government, and they've chosen the fascistic group, which is fascism. That's one of the three forms of socialism. There's communism, and there's socialism, and there's fascism. And fascism is a marriage of corporations and government together, pioneered in our time, so to speak, by Benito Mussolini, and followed to a great extent by Adolf Hitler. And I think that's the road they're going to take, and I see no way out from here. I think anything we can do politically will be a holding action. This is going to end up in the streets. And when I see 100,000 people who just broke the law marching in one of America's biggest cities, telling the people of the United States, you better allow us to stay here, there's going to be nasty results, you're in for some serious trouble. There's 20 million illegal aliens in the United States, although probably 8 million of them are children. But still, there's probably 9 or 10 million, if not more, able-bodied men. So it's going to be a real problem.
And, of course, when, especially as the economy turns down and the jobs are not available for them, they're going to demand their rights. After all, they're here illegally. They're organized. The communists are organizing them. They're planning these demonstrations. But nobody ever asks, where do the communists get their money from? And it, for years, it's been coming from the great tax-exempt foundations, creating a controlled opposition. That's what it's all about. 100,000 people marching in downtown Los Angeles today, totally disrupting the whole city, and carrying their Mexican flags. And I suspect, did they have any red flags there, too?
I didn't see any, but I didn't get a hard look at it. You know, I think I would rather have seen them not do that, because it's just going to lead... it's bad enough having the march and the temerity of the whole thing, but to be running around with foreign flags,
but
that is like waving a red flag in front of a bull.
But that, Bob, is just what they want to do. They want to divide us. They want to get the citizens angry at the illegals. They want to get the illegals angry here. That's how you change society. You get the strife going. I mean, the people who are here from Mexico are here because we've invited them to come up. They could not get jobs. They'd go back home. The federal government could go after the corporations that are hiring them. There are federal laws that are being broken, and instead of going after the major corporations that are hiring the illegal aliens, they go after Martha Stewart. You'd think they'd have something better to do. So they're very selective in which laws they enforce.
And also, if you notice, all of the people, almost all the people, in the investment banking and brokerage and banking and governmental businesses who create criminal acts, none of them ever go to prison. I mean, they give them a fine or they charge them civilly. And, you know, they just go on doing what they were doing before.
Sure. Usually they don't go. Occasionally someone will get a prison term, but that's just to make the people feel better. But in answer to Dale's question, we're in for some very difficult times. And, of course, you have to understand, behind all of this, I think God is going to bring his punishment on America.
Let me ask one more question. With all of the potential, I mean, we've got a seemingly endless source of events that could create calamity. Is it going to be one single incident, or are we just going to continue to slide down the slippery slope, so to speak, into total one-world government?
Well, the slope has been planned, and the game is on. There could be a catalyst that would be planned or unplanned. I mean, you know, the First World War started in Sarajevo. The Second World War started, really was planned at Versailles.
And it really started with an incident. It started when Germany invaded Poland. And, of course, Germany asked for a passageway to Danzig, and, of course, Danzig was a German city, and the British said, don't give it to them, don't give it to them, don't let them have it. And of course, when the Poles wouldn't give it to them, why, Germany was looking for an excuse, so they invaded Poland. And then the English said, don't you worry, we'll come to your help, but they never came to their help. And then, of course, at the same time of the invasion of Poland from the west, why, the Russians invaded from the east. And so what did England and France do? Did they go to war with Russia and Germany both? No, they just went to war with Germany. Why? Because it was all planned ahead of time. It was, tragically, people don't understand that we built up Adolf Hitler 4 years in preparation for that war, just as we are building up communist China today for the next war. When are the American people going to understand it's like deja vu all over again? Dale, we're in real trouble. Hope you'll keep listening. Are you listening on shortwave or internet?
Shortwave.
God bless. Well, keep listening and get all the rest of the people up there in Washington, because you got real troubles up there.
Yeah, we do. I think we're not alone, though.
Now get them listening to our program anyway. God bless and thanks so much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And certainly we've got Jack calling from Michigan. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have a question?
Well, yes, I do, but preceded by a comment or two, the legislature of Arizona State, I forget the fellow's name, his name might have been Miller, but relative to the border debacle they had voted to withhold federal tax monies to the federal municipal corporation so they could seal off, secure their border. And I think they've hit upon a one solution to this taxpayer-funded genocidal police action, withhold tax monies at the corporate state level, and go about the business. Bob mentioned tariffs. Well, imagine, Dr. Stan, Bob mentioned fascism, and that's very well documented, but Henry Ford right here in Michigan in 1941, according to a documentary, hemp.
Okay, you're out of time, Jack.
Okay.
You want to finish up your statement, and then we'll let you go.
Oh, okay. I was just going to ask Bob if he has that 50-year distillation report still available.
Which report is that?
What report is that again, Jack?
The sort of like the history of his experience in financial advising. I thought he said he's going to have a special report that was going to be a distillation of all of his years of experience.
Okay, do you have something like that?
No, I don't, but, you know, just call the toll-free number. We'll send you our latest, and then we can get into what you're looking for. I can get it for you.
What? Give that number one more time.
It's 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, hold that. Be right. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's been a fascinating evening. It's always a pleasure having Bob Chapman with us. Bob, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Oh, let me just ask you one thing. Is that Rainy River traded on the American Stock Exchange, or is that one
of these very small ones? It's on Vancouver.
Okay.
And the symbol's RR.V is in Vancouver. And it looks very good. And I guess the last 5 stocks in a row that we've had have gone berserk, so we've been very fortunate, and that doesn't count the big companies.
What do you think the big, now you mentioned last week the silver, what is it, Silver Standard?
Yeah, I like Silver Standard and Agnico Eagle and Gold Corp, Crystal X, and the Rainy River, and another one called Norsemont Mining, that's NOM.V. And they're also in gold as well, and copper. And I think they'll continue to do well, and from time to time we'll have other stocks. I specialized in these stocks for now almost 47 years, so I have a pretty good idea what goes on.
All right, fine. And so, well, what are your parting thoughts for us? You got about a minute and a half to wrap up the program.
I think... you know, referring to what the gentleman last was talking about, and that is holding money at the source. It's interesting that the Senate in the state of Arizona funded $10 million to send another 100 additional National Guardsmen to the border, and the governor vetoed it, saying it was illegal for them to do so, which is just an excuse. The federal government should be paying for it, but the point is that the governor doesn't want to do anything about it. This thing is so political, and Arizona is just overrun. I mean, they have hundreds of thousands a day coming over.
Yeah, of course, the thing is that this is all part of the globalist program. They want to destroy our national sovereignty. The leaders of both political parties are in favor of it, aren't they, Bob?
They certainly are, and our Congress is, generally speaking, and it's disgusting. But it will change. I think they got the message with this Dubai port thing, and the Republicans are going to get wiped out in the next election, big time.
And what we've got to do
is going to be brutal.
What we've got to do is keep trying to educate people. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you get them listening to Radio Liberty and get them to taking Bob's newsletter. I'll tell you what, I look forward to it every week. Bob, good night. God bless you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day by radio and by internet, and 4 hours on shortwave, and 9 hours on satellite, and we're actually on 3 or 4 different satellites, but quite frankly, we need your help to keep doing what we're doing. We do not have any big financiers at all. We just have a little people out there who believe in what we're doing and care about America. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters to help us, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter that will explain to you what is really going on over the Middle East, and really it's carrying out an ancient plan of the secret societies. For as President Bush said in the next to last paragraph of his second inaugural address, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, and then he put a lot of verbiage there, and then he said they were acting on an ancient plan that is meant to be fulfilled. They were acting on an ancient plan that's meant to be fulfilled. What is the new order of the ages? It's a Novo Ordo Seclorum. It is the New World Order that you'll see portrayed on the back of the dollar bill, and that occult emblem, that demonic Luciferian emblem, beneath the inscription, "In God We Trust." And they laugh at how foolish the American people are. They really don't understand what God they're talking about. If you want to know what God they're talking about, you need to get the new DVD that put out by Chris Pitterwood called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. You need to, Christy, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or see the DVD or the video of that. You need to have the information and help us to get it out. Now, we are making available for a short period of time a special offer, and that is one case of my books, A Brotherhood of Darkness, 64 books in that. And if you'd like to have any more details on that, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And this is simply to help us get them reprinted, and you're getting them a little over the cost of actually printing them. But of course, the more we print, better situation we will be in. And of course, we need to get these books out all across America. It's the best tool you'll get, the best tool you'll find any place. The book has touched people's lives. It's brought them to the Lord. It's taken many people out of the secret societies, people who are into the secret societies who had no idea what they were about. And when they learned, they left the secret societies. I don't know any other book, short, concise, to the point. It has nothing to do with the fact that I wrote it, because I'm not a great author. And I'm not a good writer, for that matter. Thank goodness I have my wife to help me with it. But the information there is valid, and that is my contribution. Really almost 35, almost 40 years of research went into that book. And it will help you to understand what's really going on today, that nothing is as it appears to be. So if you're interested in getting the book, it's available, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. But we hope many of you will want to get a case of those books. Give us a call for more information. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. And then, of course, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until, when we're together again, may the Lord be with you.